That hymn we sang at the very beginning, Love Lifted Me, just the first verse, it's really what I can say today, that I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore, very deeply stained within, sinking to rise no more. But the master of the sea heard my despairing cry, from the waters lifted me, now safe am I. And when no one but Christ could help, love lifted me. How many of you have adolescents that you're having trouble with? Or is anyone honest enough to say it? Well, I'm a good example of the type of teenager, I'm not a teenager now, but when I was a teenager, is the type of teenager you would not want to have. Because if there was any trouble that you could get into, I was in that trouble. I was brought up in a fairly religious Roman Catholic family, and I was very religious myself. I really wanted to know God when I was quite young. I wanted to be holy, and I thought the way to do that was to do all the right things and to, you know, not tell lies and to keep the commandments, to go to church and to be good to everyone. And I would do that, but then I started to think, well, if I'm going to be religious, if I'm going to be holy, it means I have to live a boring life and not have many friends, because it seems to be that the way to have fun is to do what's wrong. And also I started to find that within me, I didn't really, one part of me wanted to be good, the other part wanted to be bad. And when I was about 12, I really started to rebel against my parents. And my father drank a bit, and I used to sort of look at him drinking, and then I was introduced to marijuana, and my parents found out and that I was smoking marijuana. But when they said to me, you shouldn't do this, it's wrong, I straight away thought, well, Dad drinks, so how can he say that to me? And that was my justification for smoking marijuana. So when I was about 15, I started to smoke a lot of marijuana and take LSD, and I was quite ambitious till then. I wanted to be a school teacher. But then with having drugs in my system all the time, I just couldn't cope with the work and my motivation disappeared. And eventually I decided that all I wanted to do was get away from my parents, because we fought continually because they could see what the drugs were doing to me. And we just didn't have any good understanding of one another. And I wouldn't see it from their point of view. They wouldn't see it from my point of view. So I decided that I'd go to the city and do psychiatric nursing. So when I was 17, I left home, and I thought that while I did the three-year course, I would give up smoking marijuana and really get into the course. But when I got down there, I just wasn't expecting to see what I saw. And I became really disillusioned. Some of the nurses there sold marijuana, so there was a temptation there. So, and the only two friends I had in Melbourne were drug addicts. So I got right into taking drugs and pills and anything I could get my hands on. And also the people in the psychiatric hospital, there were eight people there that had tried to commit suicide with shotguns and blown off part of their brain and still lived and were vegetables. And I was 17, and I started to think, you know, what sort of a world is this that I'm living in? It's so horrible. And I just, instead of trying to find answers to those questions, I just couldn't cope with it. So I got more and more into drugs, and eventually I was taking so many pills that I couldn't keep my job, and I got sacked. And I was living in a flat with a friend, and all my friends turned against me because I was just a pest. Because, you know, I didn't have any money. I was just like I couldn't speak. I was paranoid. I was always hallucinating. So they tried, by turning against me, they thought maybe it would shake me out of it. But it didn't. I just became more and more disillusioned. And then I was arrested for marijuana possession. I didn't tell my parents. And all my friends, the worst thing was all my friends were turning against me, and I came to the stage where someone went out to get some heroin, and I didn't care anymore. Before then, I just would never have touched it because I knew that it's so addictive. But at that stage in my life, I just didn't care. I would have stuck a needle in my arm and wouldn't care whether I was dead or alive. But he couldn't get it. He got cocaine, which I had, And then I went on for a few more weeks, and I started to realise that I thought I was going mad. I was, even when I wasn't taking drugs, I was seeing things. I couldn't talk to anyone. I was too hung up to speak to anyone. So I decided to go back to the country and try and give up drugs for a while and work out some of the answers to life. And I went home for 6 months and didn't take any drugs. And then I started to smoke marijuana again and take LSD, but I didn't take anything else. And I continued to fight with my mother and father. And I decided that I'd like to try and get into Eastern religions or different philosophies besides Catholicism, which I'd been presented with, which I thought was Christianity. And so I rejected my religious upbringing, and again I started to take a lot more drugs. And then I met my husband, and he was going through a similar situation. He'd been living in Sydney and became really disillusioned with the values of our society, with, you know, having a house and a car and money, and realised that couldn't satisfy. And I met him, and we were living together for 2 years, and we got a farmhouse, and well, sort of hippies, I suppose. And we were on the dole, growing marijuana and vegetables, and we were into the Eastern religions, had a lovely open fireplace, organic vegetable garden, all everything I ever wanted, my own marijuana patch, all my dreams had come true, beautiful music, lovely sunsets, in the country, no noise, no smog, but still inside, I would go out into the yard and inside I was just really in the pits, is the only way I can describe it. And Phil and I used to often have these great discussions about whether there was, not God, we wouldn't say God, but we would sort of talk about a force. And I used to say to Phil, okay, we realise that this is the society we're living in, its values are wrong, and we don't want those values, and yet here we are in our farmhouse drawing the dole from that society. And we realised that we were hypocrites ourselves. And that used to continually frustrate me, and I'd say to Phil, you know, what alternative have we got to show this society? And eventually we decided that we'd go to Asia or somewhere and maybe find some guru or someone who could enlighten us. We were interested in Eastern religions because we saw it as something that affected their everyday life, their religion, rather than just on Sunday. So we're going to go to India and eventually go to Ireland because my father's Irish. So we headed for India and we got to Darwin, and one Friday night we ran out of money, so we had to stay in Darwin and get jobs, and we ran out of marijuana, so that was pretty desperate too. So we rang up a friend in Deniliquin and asked him to send some up, and then we went for a walk one night, and there was a little Christian coffee shop in Darwin, and they used to go out on Friday night in twos and witness to people, and this man invited us to the coffee shop, and we walked around for a while, and then I suggested to Phil that we go there. So we went to the coffee shop and we looked at the bright lights and we heard the Christian music and we thought, yeah, we're not going in there. So we walked up. But he saw us and he ran out, and he literally ran out. And he just started talking about Jesus and you couldn't stop him. And I just stood there and I thought, I've never heard this before. And he just spoke about Jesus in a really personal way. And I'm thinking, he speaks about Jesus as if he's alive now and he knows him. And that's the way he spoke about the Lord. And he just said that how he loved us just as we are, and how he got saved himself, and how Jesus had come into his life and changed him and given him a new life. And I'd always tried myself with my religion, tried to somehow reach God rather than God coming to me. And as he was saying it, I was thinking, if he had have said to me, do you want to be saved right now? I would have said, yes, please, I can't stand life any longer this way. But I was, the whole time I was standing there thinking, don't tell me Jesus is what we're looking for, with the thoughts that were in my mind. And at one stage he turned to me and said, do you know Jesus? And inside I thought, how dare you ask me that? But I don't know what you're talking about, really. I just felt like saying, look, I'm a Catholic. But yet I didn't know what he was talking about. I hadn't experienced what he was speaking about. And I was very aware of my sin, and I was very aware of God being holy, and I believed in God, and I believed in that there was a hell because of the evil that I'd seen in the world. So he spoke to us about the love of God, and Phil just kept arguing with him and saying, look, until something happens in my heart, you might as well talk to that tree over there. But it didn't stop him. He kept talking anyway. So eventually we walked away, and Phil started picking him to pieces, this man. And I said to Phil, why didn't you say that to his face? So then Phil said, you're right. So we stopped speaking, and we stopped speaking about him. So we didn't speak. We were walking home in Darwin. And then I said to Phil, we're both thinking about him. Why don't we say good things about him? So we started to think of the good things about this man and said the good things about him. And eventually we got home, and Phil had been reading a book by Hermann Hesse, and the story was that you might live one way all your life, and one day you might get a chance to go over and see how the other half live. And if you do, go over there and see how they live, because you might learn something. You don't have to stay there. You can always come back. So Phil, this story was on Phil's mind, and he thought, really, we should go back there and find out what they are talking about and sit down and have a really good talk with them. So we decided we'd go back the next week. In the meantime, I got a job in Darwin. So Phil went back, and he walked around the block three times before he was game enough to go into the coffee shop, and sat down. And a man came over and spoke to him who had been travelling around Australia from New Zealand, and he had got saved in Darwin. And Phil just said to him, what does Jesus do for you? And he told Phil how he'd always tried to get the outward circumstances in his life just the way he wanted them, and then he would be happy inside. And he said that Jesus changed his inside so he could cope with the outside. And that was exactly what we were trying to do ourselves. Anyway, he asked us if we'd like to come to the church the next day, and Phil came home and said, we're going to church, which was quite amazing for Phil. So I just thought, really, we're going to church? So I went along. And we went to this Pentecostal meeting, and they were clapping and lifting their hands up, and I thought, this is disgusting. These people are crazy. And why are they smiling at church? And why have they got Bibles at church, I thought, which showed how much I knew. And I didn't like the meeting at all, and I just stood there the whole time feeling really embarrassed, and I wanted to get out of this place. And I said to Phil at one stage, let's go, but Phil was too embarrassed to walk out in the middle of the meeting, which was great because we stayed for the whole meeting. And at the end, the pastor started to speak again as the man had spoken on the street. He was asking anyone would they like to be saved, and just spoke about how Jesus can save you and give you a new life. And then he asked everyone to shut their eyes, and if anyone wanted to lift their hands up to come out to be saved. And I thought, I'm not lifting my hand up. I'm not going out the front of the church. And there was all this fight going on inside me, and I'd forgot Phil was even existed at this moment. And anyway, I just put my hand up. I thought, I've got to find out if what they're speaking about is real and it can really happen to me. So I put my hand up, and Phil's hand was going up at the same time, so I thought, oh good, we're going together. So we both went out the front, and we said a prayer and asked Jesus to come into our lives and to forgive us of our sins. And I expected the heavens to open and angels to come down, and I don't know what I expected, but nothing. I felt the same. So I thought it was too good to be true, pack of lies, after I just asked Jesus to come into my life. This is what I thought. And everyone was so happy for us, but I didn't feel any different. So they gave us Bibles, and off we went home on our motorcycles and got into the flat with our Bibles and thought, we're saved. You know, what happens now? I don't feel any different. Anyway, the next day we got up, and we'd done transcendental meditation for a year, which is a sort of an Eastern, it's a part that's to do with Hinduism anyway. And we'd done that for about a year, and Phil, we got up the next day and said, I wonder if we should meditate today. And Phil decided he would, I decided I wouldn't. And I went down the street, and I saw a little Christian bookshop, and went into it, and there was a book in there called Everything You Should Know About TM, and it was about what this Maharishi says about it and what Jesus says and said, and how the two don't mix, and also a man who had been into TM and how he'd got saved, and how Jesus had done for him what this Maharishi said TM would do for his in his life. And so we both read that book and realised that we couldn't meditate anymore. And by about the third day, I noticed that I was starting to change, that my attitudes were starting to change, and that something was happening inside. The thing that really made me realise that was that our friend who we'd asked to send the marijuana, it came in the mail, and we opened it up, and we looked at it, and both of us loved it so much. It was just a god to us, and we just, as soon as we had it, we'd smoke it. Anyway, we realised that we didn't need it anymore, that we'd found the truth, that we'd actually found the truth, nothing but the truth, all the truth. And the realisation of that was just starting to dawn upon us. So we had a little ceremony and threw it in the rubbish bin, and then wrote a letter to our friend and started and told him all about what happened and how we couldn't send it back to him because we didn't think it was right. And quite a big sermon we gave him. Then Phil, the thing that was happening with me was that I was beginning to realise that it's hard to explain, just that this is the truth and that you've found something that is so real. And excuse me. And just the peace that was coming into my life, because I'd been so full of guilt for all the things I'd done wrong. And also that verse where it says, as far as the east is from the west, so far as he removed our sin from us. And just the thought that all that I've done, all the hurt that I've given my parents, all the sins that I've committed, God has he's forgotten it all. He's cleansed me. I've got a whole new life. And that was the most wonderful thing. So I was ringing up my mother and telling her all about it and preaching to her on the phone. And she thought, here she goes again. This will last for 3 weeks. She thought it was another one of my little, I'd often do things and they'd last for 3 weeks. Anyway, Phil and I were still living together. And there was no way that Phil would ever get married. It was just something I knew. His parents had been divorced and he just thought there was no reason to get married. But the next week he went to a Bible college, a Bible study for new converts, and he noticed in the Bible about fornication, and he realised then that marriage was something that God ordained, that it wasn't something that was part of the society. So he came home that night and he said to me, "We'll get married." He didn't get on his knees or anything romantic. He just said, "We'll get married. No, we'll get married in Ireland." And I just looked at him and I thought, "I don't believe it. What has happened to you?" And so we went and saw the pastor. We decided we wanted to get married that week then, after that. So we went and saw the pastor and we said, "We'd like to get married this week." And he was a bit shocked. And he said, "Oh, no, you can't. Just wait. You need to have a month, some law." And he said, "I'd like to give you some counselling before you get married, tell you all about it and show you the scriptures." So Phil and I would... And then he said, "And I've got something to ask you, and I know you might be upset when I ask you to do this." And we were thinking, what is he going to ask us? And he asked Phil or I to split up for the 6 weeks until we got married. And we thought it was a great idea. So Phil moved out, and we'd been living together for 2 years, and we thought it was so funny because he would come and visit me once a week and we'd have dinner together. So we had this little relationship, different sort of thing. And we thought we knew what marriage was all about. We'd been living together. But in those 6 weeks, God was really changing both of us. So when we eventually got married, it was like marrying a different person. We were both so much different. And it was just totally new. And my mother came up for the wedding, and she realised that something dramatic had happened in my life, because when I was on drugs, she saw me in some really bad states, and she used to say to me that she'd seen drunks in the gutter that looked better than I looked. And I'd tried to commit suicide a couple of times from taking overdoses, and I really thank the Lord that He protected me from killing myself. And those friends that sent us the marijuana, I went and saw them in Deniliquin, and I drove around the block 3 times. I was too nervous, and finally went in. I was 2 months saved, and they were lighting up a joint of marijuana, and they offered it to me, and I said, "Don't need it anymore. I've got Jesus." They said to me, "Tell us about it." So we spent from 8 to 1 in the morning speaking about it. They've got 7 children, and the next day, Gail was ready to give her life to the Lord. She wanted to wait for her husband. But Paul was trying to figure out what faith was about. So Gail asked the Lord to come into her life and save her. And Paul, I went around there, and Paul had said to her, "Don't mention Jesus in this house again," to her. And I walked in, and I said to Paul, "Where's Gail?" And he said, "She's in the bedroom." So he went and got her, and she came out, and I said, "Gail, how are you?" And she burst into tears and told me what Paul had done. And he came back and said, "What'll I read in the Bible?" And I thought, "What'll he read?" And I said, "I'll read the Gospel of John." So he sat down and read the whole of the Gospel of John to try and understand what faith was about. And finally, he looked into Gail's eyes, and she said to him, "Paul, it's real." And he said, when he looked into her eyes, he thought, "That's it." And they're both been Christians now for 5 years, and they're really going on with the Lord, and 2 of their daughters have also come to the Lord. No one in my family has come to the Lord yet. My sister is very, very close, because she realises that he's real and that he can change your life and that there's nothing else. At the moment I'm doing this, I've done 2 years Bible college at Emmaus. And that was really helpful because I just didn't know anything about the Bible much. And also to go to college, I'm going to Coringa, I'm doing nursing now. And I've just found having done the 2 years Bible college has been really good, especially with things like ethics, where we're learning about different philosophers and Aristotle. And the lecturer is really antagonistic against Christians and more or less says that if you believe in God, it's like an escape from reasoning. It's like an excuse for not thinking yourself. And all the time I'm getting that 5 days a week, and I'm finding it really difficult. But I praise the Lord that He's over all, and I've just got to keep looking to Him.